every cup of Circle K coffee is ground in the moment. So, whether you're craving coffee now or now, you'll get the freshest cup in the world at Circle K. Every cup ground fresh, starting at a dollar at Circle K. Limited time only at participating locations.
Live. We are live. Welcome. He did it to me again. This is the Supernatural Substation on the United Public Radio Network. Welcome to the new decade in the first show of 2020. This is Eileen Postanio, your host. With me, everybody is present and accounted for. Miss Bernadine LeBlanc, speak up, please.
Hey, y'all.
Mr. Pete Haviland over in Texas, speak up, please.
How you doing?
Ooh, they're putting their sexy voices on. Is that what you're doing? Sexy voice. Are we going to be sexy in 2020? Is that what we're going to do? Well,
that's
people,
the plan.
I'm bringing sexy back.
People don't tune in to hear us stroke our egos or anything else. or our egos is what I almost said. So, but they want to know, there is a guest in the future in about 18 minutes from now. It is Mr. Keith Linder of the Seattle, Washington, or outside of Seattle, Bothwell Haunting. Pete was telling me that it was an episode of Ghost Adventures, or as we call it here, Ghost Hunting for Dummies. So, hey, he did it himself. So what can I say? So we're going to welcome Mr. Linder in a little bit. So anyway, here we are. First, we haven't talked on the air since before Christmas. So what is up, everybody? Don't tell me you moved again, Bernadine, because you can't do it.
No, I didn't move again.
I'm going to start to believe that you're in a witness protection program.
I thought I heard something about that, but I wasn't going to bring it up.
I'm going to do a game. You know, where in the world is Carmen Sandiego? Where in the world is Bernadine LeBlanc? I'm just giving you trouble.
Trying to hide under a rock.
Lord. Well, we know that you moved a lot in 2019, so let's hope the roots take. All right, in 2020, putting down some roots. What's up with you, Pete?
Just same old, same old. Just working on casework and stuff.
That's great. That's good. You got through New Year's and everything okay, so that's good.
Pretty much.
Mm-hmm. So, well, nothing the usual here. You may hear my dog in the background. Bernadine, for you, I'll take her collar off because I know you're going to want to claw me because of the jingling, so pause while I do that. All right. Hang on, Valkyrie. There you go. All right. I've got the collar. Uh-oh. No,
Bernadine
does like those. Yeah, she's naked.
She's free.
Naked. I got a 100-pound dog running around naked. And there she goes. She's going to be chasing a cat. So you may hear her barking, everybody, but anybody who's listened more than one time knows that we have pets and they sometimes show up in the back. At least she's not in heat like Joe's dog was.
Well, if I hear a knife, that means the cat pulled the switchblade and got Valkyrie backed up in a corner.
You know who I miss, Eileen? Zeke.
Oh, Zeke? I can't remember who the Zeke is. No, Zeke. Okay. I know I'm getting old. I know who you're missing. Yeah. I miss Zeke, too. You think you want to bring him back? Return of Zeke? I don't know where I put him, but I'll have him for next show. I've moved Zeke. A lot of things. Zeke is our Zeke show is mascot. Wait, he's around. Here it is. Oh, shit. As usual, everything's going to fall. Zeke, to refresh your memory and memories of other people who don't know, and me, because I was like, who the hell is that? Zeke is the character from How to Talk, How to Speak Like a Zombie. He's our mascot.
Brains.
He calls the dog. Orders lattes, argues about sports. Oh, there he is, calling the dog. Goes at sports game. There he goes, LSU. He's saying LSU. Okay, so we got derided for having a mascot that was, you know, part of like a child's book, but who can resist that? Who can resist Zeke? So now
was that after a beer?
No. Well, I don't know. Okay. They may have they may have had a beer and then said, what the hell are these women doing? Oh. But somebody said it was trite, so we made it a regular part of the show. He has returned for 2020. Remind me every time. Yeah, Zeke, that's all right. It's okay. Good thing he was handy, huh? So crazy, right? Craziness ensues here. I have a steadily growing pile of stuff I'm moving out of the way. So I don't know anything that's been going on with paranormal stuff. I really haven't. I did catch a little bit of a show that, Pete, you talked about, haunted towns, hometowns, haunted hometowns or something. Hometown haunts. I caught a little bit of that, but it was boring. They've got... I mean, I was bored.
Thanks.
Well, I mean, I agree with you that you know.
Oh, I thought you were talking about that you heard me talking about it and it was boring.
You talked about it and said you weren't so impressed.
Yeah, see, I wasn't impressed
I
at all.
I can remember that. You talked about it and you just kind of weren't so impressed. So I checked it out one time on the ever-burgeoning Travel Channel. Whatever, they keep adding more, you know, whatever shows. There's some new stuff. I can't even think about it. I don't know. It's always something. Today it was like haunted towns with the Tennessee Wraith Chasers. Say that fast. You know, like, that should be a drinking game thing.
Did you see that Andrea Perrin is going to have a new show, her and her family? I think it's the old farmhouse.
Yeah.
Is that the link that you sent, Pete, where she's going to do something with Jamie Bruni and...
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah, and whatever the flavor of the day is.
Talk about that, okay? Y'all can talk about that, okay? I don't know. I don't know. I don't want to speak ill, not of Andrea. I just don't. The Conjuring family reunites for Kindred Spirits Ghost Hunt. So it's, wait, yes. Is that what you're talking about, Dean, or are they going to have a regular show?
I think it's going to be a regular show.
Probably. This is probably the launch of it. So it's Andrew and those. Yeah. So you got it. They now have a TV.
And I had seen they had a picture of, I don't know if it was it was kind of like a reunion, I guess, over the holidays. Chip Coffey was there. And the red-haired girl, forget her name.
Amy Bruni. Yeah, well, he's now a regular on their show, Kindred Spirits. So, because now. Yeah, he's on there.
How the hell did he get on it? Never mind. Go ahead. That's going to be another email.
Well,
go ahead.
They showed like you'll have to find that. They showed, you know how they, I don't know, you're watching another program and then in the corner of the screen something will come up and it's like new episode, Kindred Spirits, and it's Amy, Adam. It's the guy's name, Adam, I think. And then Chip, all looking off into the distance, you know, looking whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they told him they thought they were looking at, you know, money. I have no idea. But it was in the distance, you know, looking at Zach Bagans' Lamborghini in the sky. But there he was. And I was like, oh, they brought him on. And I happened to turn off an episode where they were, you know, all three of them were like, whatever. Yeah, so he's got another gig, I guess, on television.
Did you see what I sent you also? There was a psychic that swindled this lady out of 70 grand.
Oh, yeah.
For an exorcism.
I saw that, and I'm kind of on the fence about that because she's probably a gypsy. There she is. Police. Psychic said girl was possessed, scammed mom of 70,000. Only a gypsy could do that. I hate to say it, but
I don't know what's worse though. Is it the person that's swindling, who's swindling out of 70 grand, or the person paying 70 grand?
The person paying 70 grand at that point. If you are that stupid, I'm sorry, but if you are that stupid, you don't, you know, I mean, you deserved it. it's just like, I mean, seriously, come on. How gullible can you be? You know, I mean, really, $70,000, clothing, some other stuff, house, like furnishings for housing.
Too much disposable income.
Well, yeah. And, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, the Winchester house in San Jose, I think it is, California.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Winchester, I can't remember what her first name is, but Mrs. Winchester.
Sarah.
She went to see, a psychic who basically told her to keep building and keep building until, and that meant the psychic eventually died. That was just a bunch of crap too. She kept giving the psychic money, and all she kept telling her was build more and build more and build more. You know, I mean, I know there's some hauntings involved. I know there's other stuff, and she had seances, but come on, okay? I mean, I'm gonna go down to New Orleans, let's say, and go in a shop or something. They're gonna tell me you got to add on to your house, and you got to keep adding on, you know, because all those people, whatever that you did. I mean, come on. I don't know. I don't understand that. You know. I mean,
she was probably also dealing with, you know, the grief or the lack of a better term, of all of the people that have died from the Winchester rifles that were built by her family.
Yeah, but you know, this whoever that psychic was exploited that. Okay, that's not. I mean, telling her that all the people that were killed by the Winchester rifles were going to come back and you know and haunt her,
right? Which was just feeding her. No.
Right, it was feeding her, and that led her to more seances and exposing herself to more spirits, and you know, I mean, it's just this ball snowball that just keeps rolling along until you got this house that is, you know, to me it doesn't. Do anything from, like, I went to the Whaley house and I was like, this is the big deal, you know, it's really, even the vibe wasn't there, and I don't really, I haven't seen the Winchester house, but it doesn't impress me. As all it is like somebody took this woman for all her money, you know, to me. Yeah,
they have stairs to nowhere, windows to nowhere,
doors that open up to outside, I mean, like second floor outside. Mm-hmm. if you don't watch yourself, you're gonna fall on your butt.
The
architecture itself is incredible. I mean, if you don't get into the hauntings,
she supposedly designed all the additions, and she would get these additions in seance sessions with the spirit. Mm-hmm. Right? And not even with the medium of the psychic present. So what happened? She opened herself up to it, and they've got spirits going, let's nudge in each other, going nudge, nudge. Let's tell her to, you know, let's tell her to build this, you know, stairs that go nowhere. I mean, I see a victim there. I see that, you know, she didn't need to be doing that. She needed some more counseling and, you know, to understand that, you know, she wasn't the guilt of, you know, an inanimate object, and what mm-hmm. people started to do with that in it. It's not hers, you know, but I mean, she's long dead, but this $70,000 swindle, mm-hmm. that sounds to me something like that, you know, like they see an easy mark. And unfortunately, it's not always the Long Island medium that you get in touch with. Right. I mean, it's like, or that you find, there's a lot of gypsies. There's a lot of gypsies with storefront, psychic, you know, psychic reading, typical tarot and all that other stuff. And they will take them for their money because the Roma feel that the Gage can be swindled because they're not Roma. Anybody who's not Roma, they don't do it deliberately to hurt them. They do it for amusement sometimes and to make money out of them. But, you know, it's just a gypsy thing that they're not their people. So they're not going to kill them or anything, but if they can get $70,000 off of some stupid person, they're going to do it. That is just like stupidity meets greed, you know, and somebody was just pushing it as far as she could go, you know, opportunistic crime, but that was terrible, you know? So, you know, I don't know, but that, I don't know what's going to happen. I'm sure the girl's going to jail. Unless she can bujo her way out of it, you know, somehow. I don't know.
She's going to jail. Yeah. She's going to go to jail.
Was it on thinner? You eat the eat your own pie.
Yeah, you eat the pie and you get thinner and thinner. Yeah, yeah. And then in order to stop it, you have to give the pie to somebody else. And so somebody eats the pie. They don't. It's not that they don't like people who are not gypsy. It's just that they wouldn't swindle each other. In other words, because there are strict. You know, prohibitions and prescription is prescribed that you just don't do that to another gypsy. But they are the only people in the world that matter to them. Their race is the only thing that matters. And they don't mean that everybody should go kill them, because sure enough, they've been killed off. You know, I mean, they were 1 million shy of the 6 million in the Nazi death camps that the Jews always talk about. 5 million gypsies died, but nobody talks about that. But So everybody wants to kill him. They've never killed. It's just that, like, for instance, when I was a gypsy at a Renaissance fair, okay, I was at the Louisiana Renaissance Festival, and when everybody, and we had the woman who was Queen Elizabeth, right? And she's a damn good Queen Elizabeth. She really is. Elizabeth I. Everybody grovels and all of this, you know, takes off their hats and all this play, and a gypsy will reverence, but they will not lower their eyes to nobility because they're noble. They think they're noble. So you see, that mindset is really part of their genetic makeup. It's that gypsies are special and everybody else is just, you know, if they can get $70,000, if they can get a pig, if they can get a bag of apples, you know, whatever, from a gaje, they're going to do it. So it's just, you know, and everything belongs to them too. It's like, you know, it's not your chicken in your yard. If it wanders over by me, that meant, you know, God meant me to have this chicken, so I'm taking it. That it's that, you know. Mm-hmm. So I can't, you know, excuse what this girl did, because surely, I mean, she's part of the modern world. But on the other hand, I mean, at some point, you know, you got to go, wait a minute, I'm over here in Bed Bath & Beyond standing in line buying her sheets and stuff. It's like, and I'm giving her all this money. That woman, seriously, whoever she was, you know, I don't know, she just did not have any family that cared for her, you know, obviously. What do y'all think before we go? This is off the topic of the paranormal, but I'm sure you both have heard about the Ricky Gervais thing at the Golden Globes. What do you, I know you sent me a link, Pete, about that.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? Just briefly, I don't want to go into politics, but just briefly on what he did.
I think it was time for somebody to say what they were thinking. I think that what I heard was that he wasn't going to do another one of those again. So I think he just decided he wanted to go out in a blaze of glory.
Yeah, but he shit can his career. You know, I don't know. Did you see it, Dean, or did you see anything
about
it? Okay, well, you can check. It's in the messages. You can read up about it. It's just. I don't know. Ricky Gervais is a UK comedian who's famous for the UK version of a show here that I don't even watch called The Office, and he's hosted the Golden Globes. And he got up there and he basically he said, "Let's have some jokes at your expense to the audience, right?" And what he basically did was he went down with a laundry list of all of the things that quote unquote conspiracy theorists, you know, are say about Hollywood, right? For instance, he said, "Just come up here, pick up your award, thank your God and your agent, and F off, okay? Because nobody wants to be lectured by you." Everybody laughed, though, okay? Talking about Jerry Epstein, they groaned, but they all laughed. And if he's not doing anybody any good. Everybody, he has fooled everybody. Basically, what he did was he poked fun. He mocked all of those people by poking the fun at the people that, you know, that everybody points fingers at. So that was my, I mean, if you've ever seen the Monty Python episode with Eric Idle, Terry Jones, nudge, nudge, say no more, nudge, nudge.
Right.
Oh, she's a goer. Your wife's a goer. Huh? Nudge, nudge. That's what it was. Because you got Robert De Niro and Martin Scorsese in there nudging out each other, you know, and he's literally insulting these people to their face. And he's reading this, and there's a point where he said, "I can't even say this joke," written for him. So the whole thing was a sham. And everybody's like, "This guy's so great. He's so wonderful. He's the voice of the people." I mean, seriously, it's like the movie The Joker. It was supposed to be the same thing, like a commentary on Hollywood and the state that it's in, and the, you know, the death of our culture and all this other stuff. And it wasn't. It was a mockery. So anyway, I just wanted to mention Monty Python. That's all. I just wanted to get him in there. I mean, nudge, nudge, really. You know, I'm going to shit can my career at the Golden. You know what did happen, though, which is kind of like, it's not exactly supernatural, but it's like, right before, not right before, but within a few hours before they were supposed to go live and everybody was supposed to arrive at the red carpet, the sprinkler system under the eaves of the red carpet.
Yeah, started spewing
sewage. And it started, started coming up through the manhole covers and stuff too, right on the red carpet.
Funny.
I thought that was hilarious. I was like,
that was
that's perfect. It would have been
sign.
Great. Right, exactly. It would have been great if it would have happened while they were all in there. Okay, except Adam Driver was in there. I wouldn't want him to be covered in shit. So hopefully he would be out having a cigarette or something. So, but everybody else in there could serve to be sprayed on by a sprinkler system, you know, with shit. Really. I would replay that and post that everywhere. You know, it's like, come on. Hey, part of the Sistine Chapel collapses on, you know, old liar in the Pope's seat over there after he changed the words of the Our Father. So, I mean, it's God or it's, you know, karma or whatever it is. But that would have been, I would have loved to have seen Jennifer Aniston dripping in shit, you know.
I mean, speaking of the Pope, you see where people are calling for him to resign?
Absolutely, he's a heretic. Yeah. He's an apostate at this point. No,
if he were to resign, would they reinstate Benedict?
No, they would have to have another conclave. The unfortunate thing is that he surrounded himself with his own coven. We should do an investigative on this if y'all are willing to go into religion, because it is playing into supernatural events. So I don't know if you guys are willing to do that.
I got an open mind.
Because we could spend a couple of hours talking about this.
Hello?
Hi, is this Keith?
Yeah, this is Keith.
Hey, Keith. Welcome to the show. Hey, this is Aline Postanio. Bernadine LeBlanc just said hello. And Pete Haviland. Hey.
How you doing, Keith?
Hey, how's everybody doing? How's it going?
Fine.
Doing pretty good.
Welcome to the Supernatural Substation. Thanks for being here. You're our first guest of the new year.
Oh, okay. There you go. That's good. Thanks good for having start.
Me. I've been looking up, some of the stuff that with the Bothell haunting and all, but we're going to let you, talk about that and introduce yourself. I will say that you've written a couple of books about your experiences in a house in Bothell, Washington, I think. Is that the right city?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You lived in the house for about 4 years or so, and you had almost Amityville Horror-like experiences in it. So I was reading an article on the follow-up, and you have two books about it. You have part one and the Washington Poltergeist, I think part two, right? So why don't you introduce yourself, tell us what got you involved and, you know, where you are today, just really quickly.
Pretty much, I'm an IT project manager. I live right outside Seattle, Washington. The city is Bothell. And pretty much, I guess I got thrown into the paranormal. I was never a paranormal enthusiast per se. I knew of it vaguely. I knew of mysteries and, you know, ghost stories here and there. They get handed down through, you know, family and friends. But I've never seen a paranormal show. The movies I watch are not really paranormal. They're scary, like the original Halloween, the original Christine, and things like that. But, May 1st, 2012, me and my girlfriend at the time sort of got the rude awakening of being thrown into the paranormal by a house we moved into that year, and it was kind of scary in that the activity just pretty much started on day one. There was no lull before the storm, if you will. The first phenomena that I know now, I call it phenomena, I didn't know at the time, was an AVP of a kid cough. That we shrugged off, probably should not have shrugged it off, but you know, we did, and that seemed to be the precursor, if you will, for everything that you know about this case that followed, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, so sort of with a little whimper and then the bang, huh? I mean, exactly. After that, yeah. Pete, I know that you know something a little bit more about it, so why don't you come in with any questions? Go ahead.
Well, I was just, I thought I had read something, Keith, and maybe I'm wrong with this, but was it Ghost Adventures come out to take a look at your house and things kind of went wrong?
Yeah, Ghost Adventures came out, this is, I believe, November 2014. Mm-hmm. Me and Tina had been living in the house 2 years at the time by then. Mm-hmm. And they found us. Ghost Adventures found us through the local media, Como News, Elisa Jaffe in Seattle, who knew of Dave Schrader. Elisa Jaffe did a story of the house and heard the loud bang while there and had multiple electronic issues with their equipment. So she called Dave. Dave called Ghost Adventures. And yeah, the episode Demons in Seattle, I think, came out a few months later. It did go south in regards to how we were portrayed negatively on the episode, in that what viewers saw in that 45-minute take, and I explained this in both books in detail, and I got the emails and the back-and-forth communication with me and the Ghost Adventures crew and whatnot. But so individuals can make up their own mind once they watch the episode, Demons in Seattle, and then go deep and in-depth into the book as to, you know, there was two versions of the show. Had Ghost Adventures found evidence, I believe they would have came in there on white horses or portrayed themselves arriving in as knights in shining armor. Had they found something.
No, really?
Yeah. But they did it. And what they don't tell people in the episode is they were only there 5 hours. Ghost Adventures were only in the house for 5 hours. If you look at the episode, it makes it look like they were there much longer than that. But that's not even close to being true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. I'm sorry to hear that, man.
Well, yes, we've had experiences like that filming with, won't say the name, but yeah.
I said it, Ghost Hunters. Ghost
Hunters. Yeah, we've had our own experience. Like, did you have evidence whenever the Ghost Adventures came in? I'm asking you this because we had evidence for Ghost Hunters when they came in to do a story that of an investigation that we had done in New Orleans, and they didn't use any of our evidence and they didn't find their own. So they made up all this stuff. Did you have the same thing happen with the Ghost Adventures crew?
Yeah, I had the same exact problem. That's a good question, because we gave them a lot of evidence. I mean, 2 years of experiencing the activity that we had. I gave them the 3 burnt Bibles. I showed them the holes in the walls, the wall writings, the stuff that was left on the walls. And we had wanted to paint over that stuff, and Ghost Adventures asked us not to. We wanted to bring contractors in because we were being instructed by the local Catholic church. When that stuff is written on your walls, you gotta, you know, remove it immediately or the spirits get stronger. But they pressed to say, no, we need the evidence. We need to be able to test and analyze it. And I was surprised that they did not take any of the wall writings with them. They did not chisel out a piece of wall, did not carve out a piece of the door.
Nothing to put in the museum. I'm shocked.
Yeah, they didn't take anything with them. They didn't ask for a burnt Bible, nothing.
How did they suggest that they were going to test or analyze it?
Well, they said via email that they wanted to look at it and film it and then analyze it themselves once they got there. I don't know if you're familiar with the Steve Mara and Don Phillips documentary of Demons in Seattle Uncovered, where they lived in the home. These are parapsychologists out of the U.K., who came to the house and lived there for 2.5 weeks. And they did have the evidence analyzed, because I don't know if you've seen the Demons in Seattle episode where...
No, I have not seen that.
Where Zach asked the foolish question, and, oh, it looks like spray paint. And, you know, and the best way to find out if that's not spray paint or if it is to have it analyzed. And the time they were there in the home were November, and when the episode originally aired, is 3 months apart. So they had the time, they had the pockets, the financial means, but they just didn't do it, and put us in a bad, like, sort of like what Ghost Hunters did with you. The often quote I heard was, well, we want to find our own evidence. Well, of course you do. Well, you got to be there longer than 5 hours. They didn't tell us that we're going to be there 5 hours.
And you still have to, look at the evidence that's there to at least have a comparison. You just can't find what you want to find and not look at that. I mean, that's part of the case.
Right. I mean, 2 years of evidence that we had, that Tina and I had compiled, pales in comparison to what we threw away. But it was enough for them to go on. And keeping with, you know, I didn't know about poltergeist, but I figured they would. And keeping with, you know, documented poltergeist cases throughout history, you know, you look for the trends, you look for the similarities, you look for the tall tale signs to where, ah, this guy sounds credible because, aha, this case back in 1745 has something similar. And you can't duplicate some of this phenomena. The laws of physics just prevents us from doing that. But they didn't go down that avenue, and that that was really surprising.
I'm actually just shocked. I've got a background, I mean we've been
having this discussion for a long time. These people are entertainers, you know. They're not they may have learned something about what they do, but they're in it for, you know, the, I don't know. Well, you know, we sympathize with you. I guess we've established that, you know. Yeah. Well,
yeah, no, I'm just talking strictly casework. I mean, you know, I've been in the field for, you know, 35 plus years, and most of what I do is poltergeist work. Mm. And just talking about something that, you know, that I would look into, it just shocks me that, you know, even though that they claim to be what they are, I mean, you would have to go over the 2 years of stuff that you have, because you have to know what you're dealing with. You have to know what the baseline is, and you have to have the comparisons. Just because you want to go in there and see if you can get something for film that they say that they caught, that's not encompassing the experience and the evidence. I'm just shocked. That's just investigation 101.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's 5 hours to get that much evidence anyway.
No, I mean, it takes to, you know, review a good night of, or a good, you know, whatever collection of evidence. Keith, I just want to, let's go through some of the things that happened sort of chronologically, because I know that's how you presented in both of the books. You know, you moved in, you guys are just getting settling in, and like the first thing you hear, I mean, barely, you're in the house and you hear a child's cough, and that was just like the opening. So share with us some of the stuff that started happening to you.
Yeah, so 2 weeks after the kid cough, we had totally forgot about the kid cough. So now we're moving in and we're getting situated, and both of us, me and Tina, pretty much at the same time started noticing items missing. You know, my extra set of car keys or car fob is gone. I kept it in the glove box in the safe, never used it, never went towards it. Now it's gone. Tina's coming to me saying she has missing jewelry. We're both coming to each other saying, I could have sworn we had more silverware. We find ourselves searching for knives, spoons, and sporks come lunch, dinner, breakfast time. And these things are just weird, but like, once again, you're 2, 3, 4 weeks into the house and you're just thinking, hey, we just moved. This stuff obviously got shuffled around. Right. It's going to eventually reappear or whatever. The day reality really set in about, no, this is something totally different, was the day we were watching TV together. It's about 2 months in. And Tina has this 4 foot tall plant that she keeps by the entertainment center, sits right next to the TV. And we're watching a Netflix movie. And I kid you not, all of a sudden, this plant just darts up in the middle of the air, vertical. And it does a 360 degree spin real fast and just keels over on the ground in front of us. And we're sitting on the couch shoulder to shoulder. And I think I put this in book one. I was so glad Tina was there when I saw it, and I was there when she saw it, because I'm not sure one of us would have believed the other had we retold the story. And so we thought, honestly, that we were being pranked. We thought this was a weird welcome to the neighborhood, gotcha, you're on hidden camera, or whatever. So we didn't run from the plant. We ran towards it looking for a wire, remote control device. We thought the balloons were going to fall down or somebody's going to come out the closet and say, hey, you guys moved into the house, da 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 da. Well, that didn't happen. And then after we didn't find any gadgets or whatnot, I think Tina looked at me and I looked at her and I said, I think we have a kid ghost. because now we went back to the kid cough, and the internet helped us out because we took what everything that happened so far, the missing items, the plant levitating, and the kid cough, and we went to the internet and we Googled, how can you tell if your house is haunted? Okay. And I kid you not, 5 out of 5 websites all said the same thing. Missing objects. Objects that neither one of you owned began appearing. And we had items that neither one of us owned start appearing in the home, mainly kid toys.
And those are called apports.
Yeah, we had a lot of that early on, a lot in conjunction with the missing items. Right. Or coming downstairs and all kitchen cabinet doors are open. I mean, wide open. Every cabinet door is wide open. And the internet said, yeah, these are the tall tale signs that you might have something in your home. So we deduced it down to the kid cough because we went back to day one. And we was like, okay, kid goes, well, what do you do? And then the internet said, well, sometimes kid goes or a kid, they're lost, they're confused. You want to sort of put on a parental role, sort of talk to it nicely, gingerly, ask it why it's here, and sort of guide it into the light.
Right.
And every time we did that, we got the negative reaction, not the reaction the internet said we should get, which is they eventually leave. We got the larger objects being thrown. By that, I mean ironing board, the iron that sits on the ironing board.
That's pretty large.
Yeah, and they travel at immense speeds. I mean, these things are flying at you or in your vicinity, you know, when you're sleeping or about to go to bed or in the morning. We have a bookshelf in the hallway, and all the books were thrown off it. You know, just all my IT books, all my career books that I collected over time. And you know,
did this happen right away? I mean, after you were trying to pass it, I mean, it was like instantaneously, like to hell with you, and it threw it at you. Kind of.
Yeah,
a thing?
This happened within days of the plant levitating.
Okay.
And it was almost like a seal had been broken because after that night came the loud bangs. And the bangs that you can almost happen the same time every night, which is weird because it was always a sets of three. Boom, boom, boom. And you're running everywhere because you can't isolate the noise. It comes and goes so fast, you really can't triangulate it. And it got on me and Tina's nerves. So this bang. And then we had company over. One thing I like to reinforce to people, especially those who are fans of the Ghost Adventure or just skeptics, period, is we had friends over. I had coworkers over Monday night football night, and they too witnessed phenomena. They witnessed a plant being thrown, the loud bangs, the furniture sliding across the kitchen floor. These are things that our friends saw. There's a chapter in book one called Housewarming Party. And it's in that book for a reason because four of our friends or two of Tina's friends saw objects levitating with their own eyes. They saw it better than we did because it was closer to them than it was to us. And this is all summer 2012. We haven't even got to the burning stuff, the incendiary stuff, the scratches, the wall writings, the shadow figures, and the apparitions, because that's going to come 2 years later. And then pretty much as weird as it started, it stopped. It stopped about November of 2012, and we had the house blessed multiple times. By then, one Bible had went missing and is still missing. But the activity did stop. The activity stopped, and we had no activity for the entire 2013. And
awesome.
Yeah, that's what we thought. We thought we won. I can't tell you exactly what I did to remove them, but I'm not going to look a gift horse in the mouth. We'll take it.
Yeah, at that point, your relief is relief. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah, we thought we were done. Yeah. Because the advice on the internet says these things got to run their course and then they're gone. But the footnote that it said underneath all that was, if they do come back, you're in trouble. And so we had no activity for 2013. Well, January 2nd of 2014 arrived, I was in my office upstairs, and I came down to get a glass of water, and I fell. I slipped on the top stair, tore my right patella tendon, and it was a bad fall. It required EMT, the fire department, and whatnot, and they came, and I was laid up for 2 months after surgery, confined to the upstairs because Tina had to work, and I was upstairs. And that's when I started hearing the same noises that I was hearing in 2012. The kitchen cabinet door is slamming. I could be sleeping in my room. You know, I'm in the bed. I'm not moving much with Tina gone. And I kid you not, it's four bedrooms upstairs. You can hear, it sounded like somebody was going room to room, opening and closing doors. Wow. Like somebody was going into each room, rummaging through the drawer. And whatnot. And sometimes I really, you know, I wake up out of sleep and I'm like, Tina, because I would think, did Tina come home? Did she come home early? Is that, you know, did she forget something? And I would grab my crutch and hop toward the doorway. And there's no Tina. There's nobody in the house but me. And then I hear noises coming out the kitchen, like somebody, you know, is rummaging through the kitchen cabinets. Somebody's doing dishes and whatnot. And it's just so eerie feeling. And then when Tina come home toward the end of the day, I tell her, hey, I heard weird stuff while you were gone. And she was like, oh, really? That's kind of weird. And then that spring, I believe it was late March, early April, we had the credenza was thrown in the hallway. We were knocked out, sleep. And up until then, it was just those strange noises I told you about. Well, this night, we heard a loud crash. I mean, boom! And we never heard that before, even what we experienced in 2012. So this was even newer to us. So we rush out into the hallway, and I kid you not, the armoire is now on this side of the hallway compared to where it was earlier. It's got a huge hole in the wall. And after that night, sort of like when the plant levitated, it was violent activity every night.
Wow.
Wow. Every night, really?
Every the campaign. It was like a switch had went on. We knew that night because Tina, when the armoire went through, Tina sat on the bed and started sobbing because she knew, and I knew, even though I didn't tell her. I said, "They're back. They're back." And I knew in the back of my head because the internet was saying they come back, dude. They're back.
They come back stronger. Yeah.
Yeah, and it resumed where they left off. There was no gradual like before, and now the objects are larger. They're being thrown more frequently. I'm talking about an object that gets knocked over. You sit it back up. The second you turn your back, it goes flying across the room. I'm talking about doors slamming. You know, you're taking a shower or a bath, and the bathroom door slams shut, and all the lights go off. Or it throws an object in the bathroom while you're in it and then slams the door, then the lights go off. All the electricity issues we had cable phone company, utility company at the house constantly because it was always these weird issues with the electricity, with the cable, with the phone. So we had a landline running through the home because I had ADT security, so I had to get a landline. And I kid not, the technician would come in and, you know, you take the phone off the receiver and you can hear like somebody screaming, like a loud scream. It's not that static you hear. Line is broken. It was like somebody was, it's like a universe. You're in a portal or something. It was just this mass screaming. And even the technician is like, I've never heard that before. That's kind of weird. And we just shook our head at that.
The voices from hell.
Yeah, it was just like a thousand voices at once screeching through the phone, and it was doing wonders through every, you know, the wall panel, the security system, the cable and whatnot, because we had technicians constantly out. And this is a new home. This house was built in 2005 in a neighborhood that was built in 2005, and it was a brand new home essentially. And like I said, then the first Bible I told you that went missing a year and a half ago. Returned, and it was on fire. That woke us up one morning, 1:34 in the morning, when that Bible caught fire. And
that's a heck of a thing to wake up to.
Yeah, that was in our doorway. That was right after a paranormal team. They were the local paranormal team. Jennifer was the admin, and the medium And her team came over 11 hours prior. But when they left, they gave us instructions of what to do and what not to do. We went to bed. We was exhausted. We had three weekends or three nights of strenuous activity. I'm talking about light fixtures blowing up. And like I said, you know, we all seen those porcelain glass light domes on the ceiling in your home, you know, and you see them and with your own eyes and they just explode. I'm not talking about the bulb. I'm talking about the dome that protects the bulb.
Right.
And it explodes to the brink of powder. We found debris of
that glass.
It's a thick glass. And if you had, we stood about 4 or 5 feet from it. And we found debris in parts of the house that if I broke my own cup of glass or a bowl of glass, there's no way that debris could have traveled that far. I'm finding debris. We found debris for weeks and months. And it was just like walls didn't matter. The debris, for whatever reason, teleported through the home structure because we were finding glass downstairs. We were finding glass months later after we had the carpet guys come in and shampoo all the carpet in the house. And then one day you say, ouch, and you look down. In the middle of the hallway is three shards from that glass. You know, it's the same glass. Mm. Even though you've cleaned up that area months prior and have been traveling over that area for many, many, many times. But I later learned, like I said, my learning curve was steep. But I later learned, I still got two more years of crazy activity before I realized there's a name for this, and it's called poltergeist. And everything that we're experiencing falls under that umbrella. You know, I was always shocked about how a portion, I'm going to say all, but a portion of the paranormal community looked at our claims as if either it's too good to be true or they're making it up, because I've read other poltergeist cases, and some are, you know, far exceed mine, but nothing we've experienced lives outside the realm of previous reported cases. You know, it's the house occupants that make it a little bit more unique and dynamic, but the tall tale signs are always there. And, you know, we had wall writings. Yeah, we had wall writings, but there's other poltergeist cases where wall writings occurred. You know, it's always
in the Borley Rectory. Marianne used to have a wall writing. She would write a question, and the next day she'd wake up, and there would be an answer on the wall.
Yeah, and then the substance or the tool used is not located anywhere in the house. Or sometimes the wall writing is in a foreign language or a hard to understand language, just like, you know, sometimes rocks are thrown that are not in the immediate vicinity of the home. So these are tall tale signs that a seasoned investigator looks for when they pick up evidence to know, these guys are on the real, they're on the up and up, they're real, yeah. Because me, I can't fake that, you know, I can't do some of that stuff. But yeah, it was a rude awakening, the phenomena that we witnessed and lived through.
Well, you had mentioned a few times about the child's cough. How did you capture that, or what was it that that you heard that you got the cough?
Yeah, so this is May 1st, 2012. Me and Tina we arrived at the home to sign the papers and get the keys to the home, and we shook hands with the homeowner. And then he left. So now we're in an empty house. The house is empty. Yeah, no lights. Nothing's going on. So you know a house, when it's empty, sound will echo. I mean, it has nothing but walls. But we're kneeled down on the floor in the living room, and we're doing like what most couples do. We're getting a lay of the land. We're starting to say, hey, this is going to go in this room. This is going to go in that room. Upstairs, you know, we already know what the master bedroom is going to be. I'm claiming my office. And Tina's cleaning all the other rooms for herself. And then during the middle of our light conversation, we hear a kid cough. I mean, it's like little Johnny. It's like little Johnny, you know, coughing in the next room. And it's loud because we paused in our conversation. We stopped and we were like, was that a kid cough? And we said it at the same time. That's how real and distinct it was. And I remember we surveyed, we never left our position, but we surveyed the upstairs area with our eyes because it sounded like it came from one of the bedrooms.
Right.
And this is May, but all the windows were closed, and we were like, that's weird. But we didn't think nothing of it. We were like, well, that had to have come from outside. And still, we didn't know to equate that with the paranormal. But in talking to Steve Merritt, even, you know, who's been doing this for 30-odd years, he said, you know, most poltergeist phenomena outbreaks generally have to happen in the home, happen when the house occupants have lived there for a while. Here, you know, you guys experience phenomena on day one. It's not even classified as day one because day one y'all moved in. But here you are.
Yeah, you haven't even had the opportunity to change the lay of the land for to stir up anything. Do you have anything for
people? Yeah, we're just sitting on the floor talking, and it was like, and I always got, and I still believe this to this day, these particular spirits in this Bothell home, and they're still there, just for the record, seem to have a level of confidence and audacity about the things they do. Okay. It's like they have no, I ain't going to say fear, but they have no gumption about going against or disturbing the status quo. Whatever, it's like whatever is written about spirits, poltergeists, demons, whatever, you name it. These spirits, I got the idea of they don't care. It's that they're going to do.
Sound intelligent, though, because a lot of theory about poltergeists is that teenagers live in the home and they're going
recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis.
Yeah, they're going through puberty and they don't know they're doing it, but you guys didn't have any children or teenagers around your house or living in the home.
No. And even Steve Mara and other parapsychologists said that. They said it's possible, and it's always possible dealing with the paranormal, that we might have got it wrong in the sense that, you know, most poltergeist cases, you're right, have been in the past linked to some sort of teenage adolescence going to change.
Or trauma or stress.
Or even the family. Yeah. It doesn't have to be the child. Right. It can be the husband. It can be the wife. It can be the newborn. Yeah.
Exactly.
Somebody got laid off or whatever. Here you have two people who are on cloud 9, cloud 11, waltzing into a house, pretty much doing cartwheels, essentially, as they move into their new home.
Happy and no drama.
And no drama. And the spirits are already laying down the rules. You know, they're already telling you.
It definitely sounded like the conscious mind having survived death. So you might have. That's really rare too.
Yeah, it's very rare. According to the statistics.
How about the history? I mean, did anybody pull up anything on the land itself since it was a brand new home? Was there anything that happened on the land that might have been disturbed to cause any of this that you know of?
We found interesting things about the land and about the city of Bothell. And once again, anybody can verify and look online and study the history of Bothell, Washington, and see for themselves. Because I'm an IT professional, and one of the things as a project manager I was doing, you know, in my career that I utilized in the Bothell home is the evidence or the wall writings. A lot of that was written in Native American language. I didn't know that at first, but I found out. And how I found out was the upside down. Man, I don't know if y'all seen the pictures of the wall writings. Well, it was an upside down stick figure of a man drawn in like what looks like black oil on the wall. And this happened multiple times. And out of all the upside down crosses we had, and we had a lot, and out of all the 666 we had, you know, you've seen that in other cases. And that really didn't terrify me and Tina. I mean, we didn't like it. I didn't like it. But I wasn't thinking, oh, my God, Damon's here or anything like that. I just thought the spirits are trying to get a rise out of us. They're trying to.
Well, that's what. Yeah, I was just going to say that sometimes could be done just for strictly a fear thing.
I think they're trying to use what I've incorporated in my life and what Hollywood portrays to us all the time.
Exactly.
So me and Tina can over. Compensate and make things worse. But when we drew the upside down stick figure, I knew that was different, and I could not find any other poltergeist case where that had been done before. So I Googled, and I just sort of threw a Hail Mary in the search box of saying, upside down stick figure and then question mark. And I hit enter and it brought up all these Native American websites. And it was almost identical what was on my wall to what I saw on these websites. And all these websites says upside down man for Native Americans mean a man has died or a man is about to die. And it says normally when Native Americans draw this upside down stick figure is because a man was either murdered or the man died like of smallpox or something of that nature. That symbol is not drawn for a natural cause of death. It's a violent death. And I thought that was interesting. So you think
that might have been a warning a scary thing? Yeah.
Yes, but the part about the not about to die, yeah, I lost a few sleep over that because I was like, was that a
to
myself? But I put that aside and I tried to focus on the, okay, well, is there Native Americans buried underneath this house? Is there Native Americans buried anywhere in the neighborhood? And that's where Bothell comes in the sense of Bothell, Washington, Snohomish County, like most other places in the country, has a Native American history and Native American roots. The Willow people, as they were referred to, or the Snohomish tribe is their proper name, lived throughout Bothell. They were here before the settlers arrived, and there were major factions, major wars between them and the settlers, the Irish settlers who came in the early to mid-1800s. And the Irish settlers got the upper hand. There was a smallpox outbreak that really decimated the Native Americans all the way up from Vancouver Island all the way down to Northern California, and also specifically Puget Sound, which is the immediate Seattle Bothell area. You're looking at about 50 to 60, maybe 120,000 Native Americans just lost their lives through smallpox alone through one winter. And specifically, the Willow people lost 500 to 800 of themselves in the Bothell area. And then were buried in mass graves. Now, it doesn't say where those mass graves are. The records are not that concise. But it does say what happened in and around Bothell. We later, through the investigation through Steve and Don and other paranormal teams, when it came to compiling the EVPs, some of the questions or the Q&A, some of the answers that came back through Q&A, the answers were, yeah, there are Native American spirits here. Shamans who went to the house. I had three shamans try to cleanse the house.
Yeah, I was just going to ask had a medicine any medicine men come over there to try to clear.
And they through their ancestry admitted there's a Native American presence here. Of course they tried to quell them, to squash them, have them move on. And then some of the EVPs where the Native Americans were or the voices I should say admitted to, yeah, we're here, we're everywhere, we're watching. I view them as avenging based on the activity and based on what their ancestors, or maybe themselves specifically, were treated. In addition to, because I get this question all the time, and it's a fair question of, has anybody else in the home had activity besides you and Tina? And Ghost Adventures knew this, but for reasons that escape me to this day, did not put this in the episode. And I talked to a lot of investigators and they said that's a major piece of evidence and a major revelation. A family who lived in the home 5 years before me and Tina did, 2008-2009, did have poltergeist activity. I was able to find them. It took me 2 years to find them while I was living in the home. But I found them because their mail came to my mailbox, and normally I just write the word forward on it and give it back to the mailman. But this one I kept, and I went upstairs and Googled them on Facebook, and I found the wife, I found the spouse. Okay. And how I knew she was the one because she was the one who, she didn't have her Facebook wall locked down to where only her friends can read it. So I was able to comb through the time period of when they lived in the home. So I saw my home on her wall, and I saw She was depressed. She was writing suicidal thoughts onto her Facebook wall and her friends. She was asking them to pray for her. She doesn't know how long she's going to make it. She says she hates this house. Her son was severely ill with meningitis. So I sent her a friend request and thinking that she was not going to accept because she don't know me from Adam, but she did. And then I asked her a question. I was like, hey, my name is Keith Lender. I think I live in the house you used to live in Bothell. And I was very careful not to tell her what we were experiencing because I need her answer to be genuine. And I need to capture it in real time. So I said, hey, we live in the house that you used to live in. Has anything weird ever going to happen in the house? Has anything going on while you guys were living here? And I kid you not, there was a pause. You know, you can sort of feel the other person on the other end pausing. Yeah. And she typed back, and her answer was very cryptic. She came back with three eye wink emoticons. It was like, wink, wink, wink.
I was like,
whoa, I saw a goal. She has something for me. So then I went back to her, question mark, question mark, question mark. And then she paused even longer. She says, yeah, we had a lot of weird stuff going on in that house, but I'm not ready to talk about it now. She said, it's interesting that you should be emailing me today because me and my husband, we just got back together. We broke up in that house. And she says, can I get back in touch with you? And I didn't want to spook her. I don't want to be like, no, you got to tell me now, and have her delete me and block me. So I was like, yeah, take your time. You know, email me when you're comfortable about whatever it is you experience. Right. It took her 3 months to contact me. I had totally forgot about her and thought, I ghosted her. She's gone. I spooked her. But she pinged me one morning and she said, hey, this is Rhonda. Sorry it took me so long to get back to you. I told my husband what you asked me. And we talked about it a lot. He said I shouldn't get involved. I shouldn't tell you because we just got back together. And she said, well, I feel it's my Christian duty to tell you that we went through hell in that house. That house was a living hell. She said that house felt like it was alive. It felt like there was a dark cloud over it. And she said, I tried to kill myself 4 times in that house. She said, my son saw shadowy figures in that house. She said, they have a live-in nanny, and they would always come downstairs. Keep in mind, I didn't tell her any of this, and my story hasn't went public yet. And she says, we would come downstairs, and all the kitchen cabinets' doors would be open. TVs would go off and on by themselves. She said, one day I was having a cigarette on my patio, and I have my baby daughter in the high chair, and I put a formula on the stove to boil, and I went outside to have a cigarette. I put her chair right by the sliding door. Well, she said, well, all of a sudden the sliding door slammed shut, and I was locked out of the house. And my baby is crying and screaming. I'm panicking because now I'm locked out of the house. So she said, I had to use a rock to bust through the glass to get back into the home. And she said, they moved out a few months after that because it just got too much. But she said, electricity off and on, TVs off and on, phantom footsteps, her son seeing shadow figures out the corners of his eye, which I knew then because I had already begun seeing the shadow figures myself.
Any smells or dead insects?
Living insect flies in the dead of winter. A stench smell that almost knocks you to your knees. For me, in the hallway, very localized, very don't last more than maybe 30 to 3 minutes at a time, but it's very, it's putrid.
Okay.
And there was a campaign in December, this was even after Ghost Adventures left, when we had snow on the ground in Puget Sound, about 3 or 4 inches, and it was always one fly. I mean, this is a big fly, like a nickel, size of a nickel. And this fly, the first time you see it, you're like, man, that's a big fly. And I'm from Texas, and I've had my life experiences with flies. Flies fly when you go towards them. You know, you know, they're not. They're not the most docile, passive. This fly never moves.
No, especially in Texas, they fly after you with knives and guns here in Texas.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you become the prey in Texas.
Yes, flies, they do.
But this fly
everywhere.
Was it like a horse fly? You know, like in Texas.
It was big. That's what came to my mind. But even I've seen horse flies. This fly was big. So I would kill it, right? I kill it,
right?
And then I was like, wow, that's a big fly. It took me 2 swats, and then I would flush it down the toilet, right? And I kid you not, the next day, another big fly.
Now,
what's interesting about these flies is I only saw them over the wall writings. And I only saw them over the busted glass that exploded. It was always over phenomena or remnants of phenomena. And like I tell you, most flies, you see it. If you turn your back and look for a newspaper or whatever, the fly is gone. These flies, you can go make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. You can go watch the first half of a football game. The flies are still, it's like they were not moving. And when you kill them, it's like, well, you can go and kill us because we're going to be back tomorrow. And that happened. And that was for 3 days in a row. It was for 3 days in a row. And on the fourth day, no more flies.
Wow.
That's just weird.
And this
is really weird.
Flies. And me, I'm on the internet looking for, what does it mean when you have flies in your house? What does it mean? And he's like, well, if you have flies in the wintertime, you got any pottery or anything? I'm like, no, all our plants are destroyed. We don't even have plants anymore. That's all. We don't have nothing vegetative. It's cold. It's winter outside. The ground is cold. And, I can see one fly. But 3 flies in 3 days in a row. And they were very big. They were very docile in the sense that they were easy to kill. And they were always over the wall writings and where we saw them. And I was like, and once again, I didn't know, I couldn't do the correlation of what that meant, sort of like the kid call, but I later learned in other extreme poltergeist cases, or maybe semi-demonic, where the putrid smell and flies.
Yeah. I have a question, Keith. You had mentioned that the family before you that had lived there, one lady, she was suicidal, depressed, or something, and then they broke up in the house. Whenever you were living in, are you still living in the house?
No, I moved out in May of 2016.
While you and your wife were living in the house, did you go through any emotional things like that, like depression or anxiety, fighting more than? Couples or things like that.
Well, interesting. When Rhonda told me about her and her husband divorcing in the home, because me and Tina broke up in the home, you find yourself the arguments ensued, and there was always major activity after an argument or a period of, you're not talking to each other. There was always anxiety, a level of uncertainty. I'm pretty sure a level of depression. I never got the sense from me or Tina that we were suicidal. I know we were at our wits' end in dealing with churches, paranormal teams, and whatnot. And we were always debating, do we cut our losses? Do we stay? Do we leave? What do we do? And then came the finger pointing. And by finger pointing, I mean you're taxed. You're not getting a lot of sleep. You're sleep deprived. And we had roles. Me and Tina had roles of, you're going to handle getting the church in here. I'm going to handle documenting everything and trying to get a paranormal team in here. And then the churches, we would have to stay on top of them because they were horrible about keeping their appointments, being late. And some days Tina come home, I come on, I ask, hey, did you call Father Phil? Or, oh, I forgot. I got work, got busy. And, I'm tired and frustrated because I've been haggled all day by the paranormal teams and pots and stuff are being thrown at. So I get upset or vice versa. And you would see the tension in the home increase and you would hear the activity almost like they were listening. And on cue, things begin to levitate or move. And finally, me and Tina, when we caught wind of that, we was like, you know what? we can't argue in this house anymore. We can't have the slightest disagreement. So we would leave the house and go to Starbucks or somewhere or sit in McDonald's lobby having disagreements. But even that grew tiresome because who wants to drive to do that? And if you got a point to make, you ain't got time to get your keys and put the seatbelt on. You know, you got a point to make right then and there. And the right. spirits know
well,
that.
Well, you're giving them the energy to manifest is what you're doing.
Yeah, you're giving
them fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was like some of that they were orchestrating. For Tina, they knew how to get under her skin, especially with the female jury that she didn't own appearing in the home. Mm-hmm. Tina would come back from a road trip or be work all day, and that day I work from home, and then go upstairs and find a female earring or a necklace.
Oh, they trying to frame you.
And the kid, yeah, because Tina would come downstairs, and like most women, have the jewelry in her hand and be like, hey, you had somebody in the house while I was gone. I'm like, no, I did not. Oh, you're calling me a liar. What is this? And then that one exchange right there can bring the activity back. And it did, you know, mm-hmm. and then she would either storm off. I would storm off. And then the activity that night, I mean, good luck sleeping that night. And I would always constantly tell her, I'm like, hey, in this house, nothing is as it seems. You need to have my back. I need to have your back. And because they're listening. I remember one time we had me and Tina, I forgot what we were at a spat over, but I was going to the store. We had a spat right before me leaving to the store, going to meet some friends for happy hour. And I got to my car and we had an unresolved spat. And I was like, I was out of here. I'm leaving. And I get to my car, right? Well, before I left, I went to take a shower. So I had about 5 or 10 minutes before I leave. And at that point, I didn't know where Tina was in the home. So I leave without saying goodbye. I get to my car. I got my keys. I open up the door. And all of a sudden, before I open up my door, I see these scratches going down the car. Like somebody keyed my car, right?
Ouch.
And I was like, I'd be damned. Tina's keyed my freaking car. And I kid you not, I wanted to go back inside and just tear into her, just lay into her. Like, you know, you took it to that next level. You keyed my car. I like, you know what? If I go back in there and accuse Tina of doing it, cause maybe it's a prankster, a kid in the neighborhood or whatever. But if I go back into the house right now, we just had an argument. It'd be like putting logs on the fire. So I said, right. I'm not going to question her now. I'm going to need some data. And
was it three scratches?
Huh?
Was it three scratches?
Yeah, it was three scratches alongside the car. And I remember my IT side kicked in because I have ADT security throughout the house. And our front doors and back doors and windows, everything is time-stamped because all the data gets uploaded to ADT cloud on the internet. So if I open up a door, the ADT security timestamps that you can log in with your password and username and look and see at 11:29, da-da-da-da-da, front door was open. So when I looked at my watch, looked at what time I walked out of the door, so I'm going to go in the office on Monday, and if I can see to where the front door was open while I was in the shower during that time frame, I know Tina did it because that means Tina went outside while I was in the shower. Tina doesn't know about the timestamp about ADT security. I do. I set that up, and that was a feature the guy asked me if I wanted turned on. I said yes. I log into the ADT security and go to the log of that day, that morning, and I see the time I left the house. Lee Keith leaves the house. I see the time I came back to the store. The only time the last time that door was open was the previous night when we came home. Me leaving that house that morning was the first time somebody walked out of that front door that day. And I literally dropped my jaw and said, they was trying to set me up. They wanted me to go back into the house and accuse Tina of scratching my car. And me knowing Tina, and rightfully so, because I'm falsely accusing her of something, she would have been livid. Because she would have thought me trying because she was, you know, giving me beef about something. She would have thought I was trying to turn the tide and say, ah, you scratched my car. And that would have just created that whole fight again. And I knew right then, and that to me spoke volumes about the level of intelligence, the level of observation, and pretty much the level of entrapment. It was trying to entrap both of us, but in different ways.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's real devious.
Yeah, very, very, very. Yeah. It would not have been good had I gone back, because I mean, it was a heated debate, and I was really upset about the key. You know, like anybody would you get your cars keyed, and I would have thought that would have been unfair for her to do that. But I realized when I saw, you know, the record of nobody leaving the house, and I was like, you know, yeah, because I said, yeah, Tina, that's something Tina would never. She can be mad at me all she wants. Tina would never key my car. But the evidence backed that up. And then I realized, wow, they did not equate about the log file that I read. But they certainly scratched the car with the hopes of me as a knee-jerk reaction, you know, of just marching right back in there. And, yeah, that's devious. That's extreme devious.
Not childlike for sure.
No.
Did you have a camera on your car that you could have captured, you know, maybe somebody in the neighborhood doing it or anything else?
No camera on the car. No cameras facing outside. That was a Saturday morning, I believe, when that incident happened. Our neighborhood is very every neighbor knows it. It just felt odd. You know, I'll never know 100%, but knowing my car, my neighborhood, and you know where I keep my, I it's highly unlikely, because it was just out the blue. It was just too coincidental. Mm-hmm. There's been other moments on both sides of being sort of framed or sort of to get an argument going to get a rise out of me and Tina. You know, we were advised by the local churches that this is what they're going to do. Spirits, this is what they're going to do. You know, we're going to try to get them out of your home. You guys got to be steadfast. You got to have each other's back. And it's easier said than done. I will admit, it's easier said than done. And you can get a campaign of a week or two or 3 weeks of, you know, hey, things seem hunky-dory. But they're never going to stop. At least they didn't stop for the time period we were there. And it's always something new. They'll have a new way of tricking you or something to where you didn't plan that. Like there's no way you could have planned that or foresaw that coming. But when it finally happens, you're like, oh, wow. Oh, okay. One of the things we've always spat over is it would seem – neither one of us could get a hold of the other one on a cell phone, or sometimes you're talking to the other person and the phone would just cut off. The battery would just go zip, you know. Usually in the home or outside the home or while we're at work. And, you know, especially when we're having, you know, we're trying to plan something about, you know, who's helping us that night, who's coming over. Right. And the phone just dies. It was like certain words brought about immediate phone that, like, the spirit's like, ah, no, y'all planning on our removal. Cut it, cut the line. I use the funny analogy of, you know, because we all seen prison movies, right? We always seen visitation when the spouse and the husband are talking to each other through the glass and, right. Certain subject matter, the guy who's monitoring them, the prison guard who's monitoring them on the phone, can't talk about that. And you know, remember that? And that's how it was with us on the phone. Like, hey, did you get a hold of Father? Oh, yeah, he said we need to go to verse, Psalms chapter 23, verse, phone dead, dead. You know? And it's just frustrating because you call her back and like, did you hang up on me? No, what would you say? Father said, well, Father said, Psalm 20, phone dead.
Oh,
it is just irritating. It's just irritating.
You had mentioned that you were starting to see ghosts or phantoms in the house as well.
Yeah, I want to, your listeners will appreciate this. I saw two apparitions. Summer 2012 was what I refer to as the Gray Lady. outside my office door upstairs. And I call her Gray Lady because she was full body. She was not translucent, transparent. And 2 years after that, I saw the White Lady, identical to the Gray Lady, except she's all white. And she differed in the Gray Lady because the Gray Lady had a level of interaction with me. She turned off my lights and took off running. Mm-hmm. The White Lady was like watching a movie play over and over because she was walking from left to right through the hallway. And what triggered me even seeing her in the first place was I was hearing this rustling sound, like paper or leaves rustling coming from left to right. And it was only me in the house. Tina's outside. And I'm like, what's in the hallway? There should be no noise in the hallway. And I turned toward the hallway, and there she is. And what I refer to as the minions in book 2, Attachments, Poltergeist of Washington State, these are the shadow figures that Rhonda's son and I saw are about 1 foot tall or less. And they're very nefarious. These things are not to be messed around with. But I saw them constantly at the corner of my eye, sometimes directly. In the corners of the hallway, lurking in the shadows, peeping around corners. I attribute them as being responsible for 85% of the activity in the home, and as well as the poking and prodding that I still feel to this day when I lay down and sheets being tugged. And
did
heartbeats.
You say 1 foot tall?
Yeah, they're majority of them are 1 foot tall or less, yes.
Wouldn't that sound like an elemental, Aline?
It would, yeah. It could definitely be that.
It's all black. They're charcoal black, blacker than the burntest coffee you can imagine. Mm-hmm. And they don't have red eyes like they do in Hollywood. They have real squishy eyes. Their skin is borderline, how can I say, grayly, brittly kind of. I almost want to say scales, but they're not reptilian. Because there's hair. It's weird. The closest and poorest example I can give you is the movie Critters or Gremlins. The bad. I'm talking about the bad Gremlins, not.
Aren't elementals tricksters also?
They can be, yeah. But that sounds to me more like it's some low level demon, or it's a demon in many pieces. Basically, that comes back and coagulates as one, and then can separate itself into different, pieces, basically, or little independent selves that, come and act, that can do its will. So it can act either, as a coalesced being on its own, or it can, spread out and that way cover basically more ground and generate more fear and anxiety and fighting, So and somehow or another, it might be connected to the writing, the substance of the writing, whatever it is. But that sounds demonic to me.
Yeah, the shadow figures, I call them, Stephen, they're in book 2 and book 1. I drew them, I sketched them to the best of my ability. And you're right, they're very coy, nefarious, very stealth-like. They move stealth mode. Some of the EVPs that the investigators captured, they're having conversations amongst themselves. Mm. Very, very intelligent back and forth. Very, very clear, very concise EVPs. And they're talking, and they have no, like I said, going back to what I said earlier, they have no gumption about their surrounding or who's listening in or whatever. Mm-hmm. The audacity just shocks me they feel comfortable.
One thing about shadow entities or shadow beings that people kind of forget is that they sometimes are, most of the time, manifested by fear. It's something incorporeal, totally spirit that agitates and agitates and agitates until it begins to do exactly what you guys were doing, arguing and carrying on. And from that, it's able to suck enough energy to manifest itself. And if it's a strong,
a thought form.
Right. And then it becomes sentient. It has its own mind and its own thought, and it lives along with humans, and it develops into human-like entities or human shapes that you recognize sometimes as human. But a highly developed one can split off into parts like that. The other thing, though, that I'm thinking of is like basic fairies. I mean, something with the land, you know, that could have produced actual little people, because up in the Northwest, and I know you know this, Keith, there are a lot of legends of little people, little water people, little, you know, so there's, and it's connected to the Native American tribes of the Northwest. The Puka, I think, was one name for it. And it's weird because that brownies and fairies, you know, they all come under different names and all, but they're across all cultures. So it could be something like that, something like a powerful elemental, maybe sending them into the house, or, you know, the shadow entity itself. One thing I know is that everybody, whatever it is, was, you know, gaining strength from this. But one thing I want to back up to where you said you're not still living at Bothell, right? You're not in the house. You guys moved out.
I'm not in the house. Yeah, I moved out.
But they're still following you around?
I still have, I don't have the violent stuff. I don't have things that you would classify as a poltergeist haunting.
Right.
I have sort of reminders. Matter of fact, 2 weeks ago, you know, occasionally a glass will slide across the table and shatter.
Mm-hmm.
I still have the poking and prodding while sleeping. Some nights are worse than others. It's not always constant. Just sheet tugging. I have. The heartbeats. I talk a lot about the heartbeats because that's in the rarest of poltergeist cases.
Mm-hmm.
The heartbeats coming from the wall or from the foundation. I believe the Haunted House of Connecticut of that nature had a similar tale.
They would have to be pretty pretty advanced to be able to do that, to produce that kind of phenomena in your physical space. I mean, I'm concerned because they are attached to you. There's some sort of attachment now that seems to have followed you from the original. But it's a wide spectrum that it could be lower demonics or, you know, trickster elementals or something.
Well, anywhere. I just turned 50 back in December, and I never grew up with night, you know, we all had nightmares, right? But I never grew up with night terrors. Mm-hmm. I've had night terrors now. Had one two nights ago. And these night terrors put me back in that environment. They're chasing me, pulling me, tugging me.
Wow.
And this is just weird. And you know, you're laying down in your bed, right? And then you feel the bed indentation.
Oh, I've had that. Yeah.
Like an invisible cat or a dog making its way towards you.
Mm-hmm.
I have that a lot. I also have the draping, what I call the draping over my extremities, lower leg, shin, knee.
Like it lays over you.
Like it lays over me. Small individual, whatever. Like I said, it fits the 1 foot or smaller because it feels like a small sandbag. You ever see those sandbags on the side of the road?
Yeah.
When it's flooding, it feels like that is draping over me. I have, because I still have some of the gear, whipped out, you know, my EMF reader or whatever, and did a quick swap over those areas, and I get crazy readings. I have a compass, aroma with those areas, and the compass goes haywire. But I did capture the heartbeats using highly expensive sensitive digital stethoscopes that I bought online that heart surgeons use. And listeners or yourselves, I can forward those to you.
I'd love to hear them.
Of the actual heartbeats. And these are coming from my bed. These are coming from my pillow of the house I was living in before this, because I've moved twice since living in the Bothell house. And like I said, it's just a rampant heartbeat. And when you throw the heartbeat or when you count the beats per minute like I did, and I'm not a heart specialist by any stretch of the imagination, but you can't count the heartbeats by the minute. And we all know once you count the heartbeats by the minute, you can typically, using, you know, a scale that doctors and science use to determine size, weight, and makeup of, you know, theoretically of the animal. These heartbeats are about 111 to 122 beats per minute, 127 beats per minute. And it puts that animal, if we were just to throw that up against the chart of all animals who would have a heartbeat that fast, you're looking at something no bigger than your smallest or your largest rabbit or your household cat is the size of a whale beats, you know, less than 10 beats per minute. Human being on average hovers around 65 to 70 something beats per minute. And I have countless of these digital stethoscopes magnify sound 100 times. They're highly sensitive. And they store the data. You know, they come with a built-in SIM card, and they come with Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, and all that. It was able to capture those heartbeats. And even Nikki Novell, when she lived in the home for a week and a half, she felt the heartbeats with her bare hand. I was taking a nap, and they were downstairs investigating. And I can always, I've been telling this story about the heartbeats to whoever will listen to me, but it was hard to capture that phenomena because, you know, how do you capture something like that in real time? Right. Well, that day, I felt the heartbeats because I was taking a nap, and naps are always worse than me actually sleeping, but I interrupted my nap because I remember Nikki and Carissa were downstairs, so I rushed downstairs and I say, come up quick, because normally when I feel the heartbeats and I leave my bed, I can come back in 3 minutes' time and it's still there. That's how I was able to do it with the digital stethoscopes. So I just had, I didn't have the stethoscopes at the time. I said, put your hand on the bed, put your hand right here. And Nikki did. And oh my God, her mouth, her eyes just lit up because she's like, I feel it. And it's like, you know, we've all had, I don't know if you ever had a pet cat or something or a pet, you know, you can put your hand over their rib cage and feel their heart while they're sleeping or purring, right? That's exactly what it feels like. It feels like a beat underneath the covers. Might not even be underneath the covers. And it lasts for about 3 or 4 minutes. And then it's just poof, gone.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, I have 4 cats, so I'm kind of familiar with the not only the beating, but the creeping and the all the other stuff that they do. Have you ever tried like protective things, you know, as you move from home to home to maybe rid yourself of this? Has anybody ever, you know, through all of the people that you've talked to, given you some kind of advice to get rid of them? Or do you want to get rid? I mean, do you want them gone?
I want them gone. Yeah, mm-hmm. I've done cleansings multiple. I've done cleansings where I had to go to them. I've done cleansings where they've come to me. Mm-hmm. Some are rather lengthy. I've done 5-hour, 8-hour sessions. Those can get pretty expensive.
Yeah.
I've had shaman cleansings. Father Roy, when he did the exorcism for the house, he did an exorcism on me before he did the exorcism on the house. Mm-hmm. And I have salt rocks throughout my home now. I have rocks in corners of the home, at the foot of the bed or the four corners of the bed. I wear a cross around my neck. There's a cross in my car. Mm-hmm. I try to take a lavender bath as often as possible.
What you need, though, is vinegar. You need vinegar.
I've not tried.
You haven't? Well, Bernadine knows this is me, right? Vinegar, you can put just plain white distilled vinegar in little saucers around your house, especially in overly active areas. You put it out out of the way. You leave it there for, you know, a couple of days, depending on how the activity is. And then you throw it down, you know, you empty it down the drain with cold water, the cold water faucet, and you refill it. You put the bowls back out again with new vinegar in it, because what it does is it retards the ability of these things to manifest. It has a chemical in it that is, as a matter of fact, in garlic, onions, you know, tulips and lilies. It's called Allicin is what it is. You can even find it as a supplement. And that keeps the etheric connection. It makes it unable for them to condense enough to where they can manifest or, you know, influence the environment around them. And then you too, you could take once a week or maybe twice a week, get a bottle of distilled water and take a shower at night. And then dump that, put about a quarter of a cup of white vinegar into that bottle of water. And when you're done showering, dump it over you, let it all flow down the drain and go to bed. Next morning, don't shower it off. Next morning, take your shower, you know, as usual or whatever. So do it at a time where you're not going to work. You can do this repeatedly. It cleanses your aura. The other thing that you could do is add cider vinegar, like a quarter of a cup, to your laundry for a little while. That'll break that connection. You see, I always go for like the most simple, least invasive things. You can start eating more garlic and onions, and you can start bringing in lilies and tulips, you can increase the vinegar.
For the garlic, though, because then you might lose some friends.
But it's funny, but Keith, you know, in folklore, you know, they say put garlic out and it keeps vampires away. That's the reason why. Chemical. Yeah, that keeps them from attaching to the etheric plane or the etheric energy, just that field of energy that is like right above our physical manifestation or our manifest reality. They can't condense or they can't, you know, attach to form, you know, to influence in any way because it retards it. And you may have to do it for a while and, you know, they may get mad at first, but, you know, if you keep this up, what you want to do is make yourself unappealing. Like Pete just said, too much garlic, people are like, that's what you got to do. It's one thing that you can do, basically, you know, and that's really least invasive. And you just keep putting the vinegar out and they won't be able to, like, next to your bed. And they won't be able to get to you. I mean, it's worth a shot, you know, because you've tried everything else. But, go to the grocery and get some lilies, you know, those stinky lilies. Like they have the groceries have those little bouquets and they got those big tiger lilies that really kind of stink. They're pretty, but they stink. Bring them in. Don't let them wither. And you know, when they start to kind of droop, get another bunch. Put them in the room. Put them in your bedroom. Put them wherever, like, you're experiencing the most. But anywhere in the house, right? You can add some basil and bay leaf to some vinegar, a little bit of like a quarter cup of vinegar in a spray bottle. And you can even put spearmint in there too. And you can clean your counters and stuff. The thing is like you're cleansing and you're driving them away. You know, you've got salt, you've got, stones and crystals and all. It wouldn't hurt to put salt after. If you do this and you experience like, a cessation and they seem to be leaving you, then, you know, when you feel comfortable, you can start putting salt around your house and because you don't want to lock them in there with you. OK, so but you would you can open your windows, put salt around your house. They're going to want to go. And then if that works, put it around your perimeter. Carry a little bag of salt in your car. You know, just a little pouch of whatever. It's natural, and they will probably respond to it. If nothing happens or it accelerates it or exacerbates it, then it's probably some sort of demonic and not elemental or, you know, like, connected to you as some sort of a shadow. It could be the lower demonics. And they've just attached to you for fun. I mean, they do that stuff, but, if you really want to get rid of this, it's worth a try, you know, people, it's 1,001 uses for vinegar. It's 1,002.
Okay. Negatively, is that an indication of you doing the right thing or do you stop or you just gotta,
They're obviously not liking it. It depends, though. If they react in a way that is dangerous to you, then I would stop. I would stop doing it. I mean, I think the cleansings of yourself and stuff, you know, would be okay because it's keeping you protected. But they would first be reacting to changes in the environment. So I wouldn't want them to get violent, and that's the time to. you know, yeah. Look, you know, have, I don't know if you've tried anyone who practices voodoo, but, you know, I would recommend a Roman Catholic priest myself, but then you could also find a voodoo practitioner who might be able to, you know, help move those on because I think some natural stuff, you don't want them to keep following you because it's polluting your environment, and wherever there's spirit activity, more spirit. It's like you're on a highway and you see a wreck and it's rubber. You can't help it. You just look. You can't help it. Well, that's what spirits do. It's like, look, there's all of these little things up here aggravating this guy. Let's go see. Then there's more. Then it attracts bigger things that are like, okay, what's going on here with all this energy? I want some too. Then you have problems, you know? So, but a simple little, I mean, you could let Bernadine know by email if it helps, you know, or not. Yeah. And maybe there's someone local. There also is one more thing before I forget. Asafoetida, okay? It's a stinky, stinky, stinky incense. It's called, you can look it up, asafoetida. It's fetid is what it is. Nothing can stand the smell of it. It stinks like hell, but they will go. They will go with that. So if you get to where you feel danger or something like that, then you can get that from a local, I don't know, your mystic store, you know, your local, maybe there's a Botanica, I'm sure in the Northwest.
Yeah,
yeah, they've got them out there. Yeah. So.
Exactly.
Hey, and Keith, with your permission, could I get your email address from Bernadine? Because I've got a book I can send you. It's a PDF file. It's got some protection sequences in it that if you might want to take a look at them, see if they help you. I could send it to you.
Yeah, email me because that way I can reply and send you all of you the you know, the heartbeats and the other things we talked about tonight.
Sure.
Okay. And I want y'all to watch the hour and a half documentary of where the UK guys did investigate the house, and they did get the shadow figures on video. So y'all,
oh awesome,
definitely
okay.
Find that interesting.
Where do we find that again, Keith? The documentary.
Well, actually, it's easy to find. It's because it's free on YouTube. If you type "Demons in Seattle Uncovered," you're gonna see it right away. It's gonna be an hour, 18 minutes, hour and 20 minute. Video. Uh-huh. I think it shows a guy holding the Bible. He's holding the burnt Bible in my hallway. The Fox News anchor guy is, but definitely worth watching that. I would love to get y'all take on the final analysis of that, as well as their methodology. I think you guys will find it interesting and appreciate how they approached the investigation from start to finish, because you know, TV makes it look like it's, oh, we're here and we interview you for 15 minutes and aha, we're on our way. No, they vetted me for about a 3 months to 4 month Q&A via Skype of talking, getting the story straight, getting it down, getting the phenomena recognized, forming a plan of action. And then they came, you know, they want to see if I'm on the up and up. Do I have level of consistency? Am I being avoidance? Am I not looking them in the eye? All these things that I did not know I was under the microscope for, but it's just the methodology of separating the truth from the falsehood. And then they made the decision to fly 6,000 miles. And
from
it was never
Great
a question.
Britain, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Britain. And it was never a question of them not living in the home. They were not going to get a hotel like Ghost Adventures did. No, they lived in the home for 2.5 weeks. Mm-hmm. And each day they investigated about 18 hours out of the 24-hour day.
Wow.
That's great.
That's the way you need to do it.
Yeah.
Is to be there. Well, guys, we're up against the heartbreak at the end. Keith, I know your books, both of the books about the Bothell House are on Amazon. And I don't know if you have a website, though. Do you? Would you like to give it to us now?
demonsinseattle.com, one word, okay. demonsinseattle, no spaces, .com. The Bothell Hell House is on Amazon, that's part one.
Mm-hmm.
Attachments, Poltergeist of Washington State, part two is on Amazon, both Kindle and paperback version.
Well, you know, I think there's going to be a part three because it continues. we want to extend an invitation to you now to come back in a couple of months and we'll talk some more about this and see if any of that happens, you know, anything helps. I mean, you can always email Bernadine and, you know, I can give you some other stuff, but we're up against the end. This has been so good. And we really, I mean, I'll be praying for you that, you know, that something works. You really don't want them staying with you though, because that can affect everything going forward. So, but thank you so much for being our guest, our first guest of the new year. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It was good. Thank you.
All right, Keith. We'll talk again soon. Thank you.
Good night.
Bye. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we've been listening to Mr. Keith Linder. You've been listening to Linder, I'm sorry, on the Supernatural Substation United Public Radio Network. Say goodnight, Bernadine. Say goodnight, Pete.
Night-night.
Hey, good night.
Okay. Stay tuned for Miss Kathy Bilski. You're going to get high and take a quantum leap. I believe still that Terminus is at 2 a.m. Stay up.